This is CliffCentral.com.
My name is Sonia Booth. Welcome to the Opinion Booth. She writes, directs, and edits films, a founder of Black Queer, of which the Twitter bio reads, "We are militant about creating creative counterculture spaces." Phew, that's a lot of C's. And yeah. She refers to herself as a controversial independent musician and curator. Obi Mavuso, welcome to the Opinion Booth.
Thank you so much, man. I'm very excited and I'm very honored to be here. Thank you.
So now, I love your quickness. Is quickness the right word to use?
Yeah.
Because, I mean you, the way you spell Black with a V replacing the A, how you write your name with a capital B. Is that a deliberate attempt to be different?
It is, because I feel that people sleep on me, so I make them super vigilant with how I write, you know, and I brand myself. So, yeah, it's very important to me.
People sleep on you?
Yeah. They've slept on me a lot of times. Sleep on me in a sense of I've created a lot of spaces and worked with artists who have booming careers as we speak. However, I feel like people don't really give me the props, especially here in South Africa. So I give myself the props. And oftentimes people say I am arrogant. And I'm like, no, it's just confidence. Even Beyonce says it. You know, it's not arrogance, it's confidence. And sometimes people feel some type of way because they might want to borrow it from us, you know. But yeah, that's why I do.
Because my thing is that if you're not confident on your behalf, who's going to be confident on your behalf?
Exactly.
Or be confident for you?
Exactly.
If you don't put it out there that I am the best at what I do, nobody else is going to do that for you, or you're not going to wait for somebody else to do that for you, because it might not come, right? Wait forever, right? But now, who are those people that are not giving you the props?
It's a lot of them.
It's Cliff Central Uncensored. You're allowed to speak your mind.
It's a lot of them. I've created spaces since 2012. I moved from, because originally I'm from King Williamstown in the Eastern Cape, and I've always just been this different child from my family. And then I was like, staying in a small town with small-minded people who won't allow me to grow won't do much for me, because I know that I have a strong personality. So I moved to Cape Town in 2012. I only had R1,500 in my bank account, but I was like, I will make it work. I have friends and maybe they will love me enough to support me while I find myself. And fortunately, I had a group of friends who allowed me to brave out and create a brand called Jam That Session. At the time, I started with a friend. It did really well. We worked with people like your Samantha Lehukos, minus the controversies that happened between us and her, and Loiso Mkize, an amazing visual artist in South Africa. We've worked with so many brilliant artists. Zoe Modiga is also one of them.
I love her.
She's brilliant. She actually came up at our space. So it's one thing that I pride myself in. I have a knack for knowing how to look for talent or scout talent, if you may put it that way. From then, when I created those spaces in Cape Town, I just saw like a lot of hostility from people. Instead of actually celebrating someone who has nothing but is growing, people were so quick to just seem very hostile and unnecessary, and then they will project their negativity on me. Obviously, I wasn't coached as to how to deal with such, you know, so I didn't know how to deal with it. And being an empath that I was, I absorbed all that negativity, and I didn't know, and I self-destructed in a way. So, but I'm very happy to be where I am right now. I'm very peaceful. And now I know how to engage with people better, and to also just be, or just to preserve my space, so to speak.
I mean, you're a busy bee. You just mentioned Jam That Session, right? You hosted in Cape Town.
Yes.
And then Queers on Smash.
That was after Jam That Session. So, well, that was actually while I was still curating Jam That Session. Jam That Session was more of an alternative space for artists in South Africa. So artists like myself. And then Queers on Smash, I felt I needed to create queer counterculture spaces in South Africa. So hence Queers on Smash. But I dissolved the company and moved to Black Queer, because Black Queer is where I am. You know, it's progressive, it's edgy. I feel like it could go, you know, on a global market more than Queers on Smash. So yeah, that's me.
What a counterculture spaces.
Okay, well, I would say it's not your typical commercialized South African spaces. You know, you get your commercial spaces that always book artists like your Casper and your Vest, your AKAs. Yeah. It's always like a thing in South Africa, of which there are people like me who like alternative or counterculture spaces. Let's say we listen to artists like The Internet, artists like Side the Kid, who's also from The Internet, artists like Anderson Park, artists like Obi Mavuso, artists like Taniswa Mazwai, artists like Zoe Modiha, artists like, yeah, like great artists from South Africa who aren't commercial. So there are people like us like that. And there are also queer people like me, queer people being the LGBT community, who enjoy, you know, being in safe spaces where they can feel comfortable because they're with like-minded people. I am for that. And I'm always going to be militant about creating such spaces because I feel, most of the time, I feel excluded. You know, most of the time, I don't get bookings. I don't know if, you know, promoters don't think I'm cool enough or my music isn't cool enough. So I'm just like, okay, I will just create my events and book myself and book other people.
I like and that.
That's what I do.
You're not going to book me. I'll create my own and I'll book myself.
I'll book myself.
And I'll pay myself.
That's
I'll
right.
sign my own check. No, because, you know, initially when I saw the wording counterculture, the first thing that came to mind, the initial thought was rebellious.
Exactly. Yes.
Uh-huh. So I'm on the right track.
You're on the right track. Yeah.
Okay. So safe spaces to be with like-minded people to push different missions, agendas, whatever that you want to put out there.
Let's have conversations as well. Because most of the time, it's just about parties and, you know, turning up, drinking. And then now we hear of people, you know, committing suicide. Because, like, you know, drugs and alcohol, you know, get normalized into this culture. And then people don't think, people don't see that we need conversations, we need dialogue. And that's the reason why I open such spaces, so that we may talk. And then that would, I think, lessen, you know, depression or suicide rates in South Africa. But I don't think South Africans really think it's a cool thing yet. They think it's a weepy, mushy thing where people just come together and just have sobby, you know, conversations. But it's just a support system, you know. It's just encouraging people, you know, to know that it's okay not to be okay. And when you're not okay, it's okay to speak with other people who are also not okay, so that you may learn and grow together. I think that would actually help, you know, because there's a lot of toxicity out there. And then being healthy individuals, or instilling, you know, a culture of being a healthy individual would be great, you know. So that's why I do what I do.
I'm glad you mentioned toxicity.
Yes.
Because you've released new songs which speak about abandonment issues.
Mm-hmm.
Is that based on your own life or observations of other people's lifestyles?
I would think it's based on my own life, to be honest. I'm not shy to speak on my life and to speak on the fact that, you know, I was raised by a narcissistic mother. And when she was alive, because she passed away when I was 9, along with my father. So when she was when I was 9, and before that, I wasn't aware almost as a child that oh my god, like my mother is this person, you know. But I don't remember, you know, feeling that motherly love from my mother. You know what I mean? So when you're raised by a narcissistic parent, you grow up being a healer, you grow up being a codependent. And as you grow, you have to be needed by people around you. You have to heal people, and that's when you gain your sense of self-worth, by being needed by people. So I grew up being that person. I had to please other people in order to feel great about myself, and that was toxic, you know. And I didn't know that I was that person until recently, you know what I mean, when I was married. I was married to a woman. She was delightful. However, I saw that we both had issues that we hadn't gotten over, and we made rash decisions, and those rash decisions got us to get married, you know. Didn't end well, but I learned a lot from that relationship. And all of those abandonment issues and the trauma from my childhood, they just came out. And it happens sometimes when you meet the wrong partner. Yeah.
It's interesting. You said you lost your mom at 9 years.
Yes,
and your
both
dad
parents. Both parents, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
As in at the same time?
Yeah. I mean, months apart, but same
Whoa.
Time. Yeah.
At
yeah.
the age of 9. Any siblings?
Yeah. I also lost my brother, hey? Like,
as well?
Yeah.
Same year?
like same time. He passed away and was buried with my mother on the same. He passed away at my mother's funeral, and it was very traumatic. Me. Very traumatic experience. I won't
so
lie.
You're the only child.
I'm the only child.
No siblings.
No siblings. No.
Whoa, that's hectic.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned something very interesting, and I love your openness. I love how you speak your truth, because often we live a lie.
Yeah.
Often we pretend that it's all glory and and golden and fabulous and all that. But you mentioned something very profound, that you had issues that you had not dealt with, but they caught up with you.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about, what do they say, your demons coming back to haunt you. Demons, as in if you're not going to deal with it, don't think just by ignoring it, it's just going to disappear. It will catch up with you, and it caught up with you. But luckily for you, you caught on it before it was too late, and you faced your demons, if we can call it that. And you're in a better space now, would you say that?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's demons, because I wasn't even aware that they were there.
Yeah.
You know, so I needed for life to teach me a lesson. And life was pushing me in directions the whole time. Sometimes I saw that I am being taught a lesson here. I need to stay away from these kind of people. But I didn't want to, because maybe I was too young and naive to actually know what was good for me. So, but I learned a lot of painful lessons from people. People have always been teaching me lessons. And now I understand that it's very important to have your own sense of self. You have to have your sense of self. If you don't, and then you will keep on meeting people who will just keep on reminding you that sense of self is not here. Where is sense of self? Okay. Try to find sense of self, and it's going to be painful. It's going to be so painful, and it's very unfair for you to project, because you're going to project a lot when you're not yourself. And then that person must carry the burden of always being your parent, so to speak, like taking care of you. Nobody has to take care of you. Nobody is entitled. You shouldn't be entitled as a person that, oh, I have a mother. Even when your mother gives birth to you, they don't need to take care of you. They have to, I mean, nurture you for the first few years and teach you, okay, this is the basis of being a human being. You need love like this. And that way you have that sense of self. So I didn't have that. So now it took so many years, like maybe 26 years for me to develop it. Can you imagine, like, the work that I should have had when I was young, it only happened, it took 25 years. Could it happen over 6 years? Because as a human being, as a child, that's you fully develop when you're 6 years old, when you're conscious of, I have my own identity now. This is my sense of humor now. You know what I mean? Some people don't have that. And that's why we still have people who will continue to always be messed up, going in and out of jail, because they have development issues. And it's very important. And I'm now very much into helping children understand that you abuse is abuse. And even your grandmother that you love so much can be very abusive, and you need a good support system as a child. So I'm also very much into that as well, like teaching children to know that their voice matters, starts as a child.
Profound. A study in the U.S. You've got so much wisdom. How old are you?
I'm 27.
Where do you get all this wisdom? You know, the way you're talking, it's like you've lived for like forever.
I feel like I have.
You've got
I don't know.
Brain of a 70-year-old that's lived
that
and seen
thing?
It all. It's a compliment.
Ah, thank you.
Because I appreciate wisdom. That's why I'm sitting here. I mean, I'm not even looking at my notes, because I'm listening to you, and you could continue talking because you are full of wisdom. You're like an elephant, and you know an elephant and a dolphin, they're known for their big brains.
Okay.
Kudos to you.
I'll take
it's
that.
A flipping compliment.
Thank
of course.
Thank you
take
so much.
It
no,
in
I'll
your stride
it.
And own it.
It
and
yes.
Say, Enkosi. Jabulela.
Jabulela kakhulu.
So now, a study in the US suggests that same-sex relationships suffer higher levels of domestic violence than heterosexual ones. Why is that, you think? Because I was alarmed at that. I was alarmed.
Wow. That's actually a shocking statistic.
Yeah.
Because I would think it's actually heterosexual people.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Sure. Okay. Well, I think from my standpoint, I feel like maybe it's like a lot of the abandonment issues that we go through, because number one, we go through our parents maybe not being there for us at a young age, and then we also still go through that rejection. You know, so it's a lot of abuse that's instilled, and black families are the worst. Like, once you show them that this is who I am, I'm a homosexual, like, they even teach their children who are way younger than you to treat you like badly. My family is like that. I have nieces and young cousins that they don't respect me, and they don't respect me because their parents tell me, you don't respect someone like that. And it's sad.
Sure.
It's very sad, because now you can't reach that child because they're so into what their parents are saying. You know what I mean? You see what parents, how toxic parents
are. They've been poisoned, yeah.
Like, black parents are very toxic. And I don't know how to actually really get to the children, because I feel very, very sorry for the next generation that's coming out, like the ones that are younger than me. And I see them, like, around Brahm, you know, it's that screw culture, like... It's that whole normalization of drugs and normalization of self-abuse, normalization of abusing other people, not taking accountability. And it's from their parents. They see this and they think it's cool, you know. So that's my stance. And I think it's just like a whole lot of rejection from black families. And then the reason why domestic violence happens between LGBT couples is because they're still finding themselves, and it's so sad. They're still finding themselves, and they think that being in relationships is the most healthiest thing. It's not. Sometimes it's okay to take a step back and be single. It's okay. Stop listening to what TV says, that, oh my gosh, you will be seen as a loser if you take time for yourself. No. Who says that? And look at these couples that are breaking up all the time, and the media reports them.
It's sad.
No.
It's
no,
pathetic,
it's actually very pathetic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, it's sad.
So now you off the, are you in agreement that the same statistics are a true reflection of what is going on in South Africa in particular? Because this study was done for the US.
Well, I think, I think South Africa is just going through the most. Hey, South African LGBT couples, LGBT people are just going through the most. South Africans in general are going through the most. If we're not hurting each other verbally, it's just physical. And when someone dares to say, no, this is not how you treat me, then the person is like, how dare you tell me this is not how, like, how do you want me to treat you? You know, there's a culture of, I will silence you. You know, I will invalidate your pain. There's a culture, like, it's bubbling in South Africa.
Wow.
Your pain is not, important enough. My pain is louder and important enough. And there's that whole cool kid culture as well, where if a crew of people don't like you and they don't even know you, they will just also go on social media and they will just say a lot of negative things about you just to silence you, because maybe you speak too much truth, or, you know, it's that whole thing. I feel like we're going through it in South Africa. And people must just take care of their mental health. I feel like the time is now. It's so sad. I was in Malvo this past weekend. I was dragged by a friend because I don't really like going out these days. And I went there, and most of the time I was just sober and just looking at things around me happening. And then I'm seeing this young gay boy, you know. I think he was probably 25, 24. He looked very young, but he was out of it. He was, like, drunk. Like, sitting by the side of the road, puking his guts out. And then the lady who was standing next to him, I don't know if that's his friend or what, but I don't know if friends these days are so supportive, you know, of each other. And maybe they can just tell each other that maybe you shouldn't be drinking that much, you know. I don't think that people do that a lot, you know, and I don't know why. It's not cool to be standing by the side of the road.
No.
Looking like that.
Puking your guts out. No, there's nothing cool about that.
No. So, yeah.
There's nothing cute about that.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Whoa. You also speak and sing about the black lesbian experience in South Africa, particularly in this day and age, in 2018.
I have to.
Did that lead to Black Queer TV?
Yes. To be honest, when I started Black Queer, it was just about selling merchandise, like positive, you know, messages displaying, you know, the LGBT experience in South Africa. I did well for the most part. And then I just thought about branching out because I've always been passionate about filmmaking. I have a short film that's out called Asanda Forever. If you search for it on YouTube, the same name, Asanda Forever, you'll find it. And I've just been writing a lot of scripts. Last year, December, something really profound happened in my life and it changed how I view life. So I went back home in the Eastern Cape and I started writing a lot of scripts. Maybe I wrote like 10 scripts in December.
Whoa,
and I was
that's
like,
a lot.
Like, I was just writing. And then actually I haven't even produced that work. I started writing a new script that I started shooting last week. And I wrapped it up. I just wrapped it up. It's a reality TV series portraying the lesbian and gay experience in South Africa. My vision with Black Queer TV is to just tell as many LGBT positive stories, you know, and to, I don't know, teach South African people that we are human, you know, and we don't have to be flamboyant to be cool to you. We don't always have to have masks and let you guys treat us, you know, in a bad way, and then you think that we're still gonna be cool with being treated in a bad way. Because I watch how a lot of heterosexuals treat me and my new partner. I'm just like, no, you know. And my partner she doesn't really like confrontation. I also don't, but I will put my foot down when you try and, you know, treat me bad, because I'm not allowing negativity anymore. You don't get to treat me like that anymore. All of that abuse is in the past, you know. Now I just don't tolerate negativity at all. So that's where Black Queer TV comes from. I'm very rebellious about what I do. And I know a lot of people keep on saying that, oh, you know, it's going to take so long for you to actually get anywhere. Okay. That's your opinion.
People say that to you.
Yeah, that's your opinion, and I'm so
what
happy.
What people are you keeping around you?
No, it's not people that I keep around me, but I meet a lot of people, you know. So it's part of also, you know, being this passionate person that I am. I always have to get myself out of comfortable situations, go and shoot maybe by MTN taxi rank, and then you meet very different people, and then they will tell you a lot of things, you know. So that's part of it. And I'm just saying, like, whatever people say, I don't internalize it, because that's your opinion and I'm happy for you. I'm happy that you have an opinion and you think it matters to me. You know what I mean? It will never matter, but I respect you enough to, you know, listen to you, and then I dismiss that. You know what I mean? Because I know what my goal is for my life. You know, I know, I call myself like the Black lesbian Oprah. I'm going to be that person who owns her own TV network. You know what I mean? And I'm just gonna up, and I see myself working with your Issa Rae's, you know. I see myself working with these very big figures, you know. Maybe I will even sit down with Kanye West one day. I'm sitting down with you, you know. I never thought this would happen. I'm sitting down with you, Sonia Booth. I've been reading about you.
I'm not a big. You're a big like deal.
You're a big deal. No, I'm sorry. You're a big deal. You're a big deal.
Now I'm blushing. Now you're distracting me.
This is South Africa. You know what I mean? And most of the times we read magazines, you know. I've read magazines and have heard, you know, of your name like over the years, and I was like, okay, she seems like a very well-kept woman. You seem very gracious.
Well-kept.
Yeah, you seem like you're very gracious. You're quite self-aware. I don't know if that's that, you know, but that's what you give
okay,
off.
Okay, stop talking about me. Let's start. I don't want just to talk about me. This is about
but,
you
well,
here.
What I'm saying is, we have this is South Africa, you know. And I'm a child from a very small town, you know, and I grew up reading drum magazines. I grew up reading people magazines, putting posters on my wall and saying, I want to be that, you know. When I read tabloids about South African celebrities, seeing Sonia Booth with Matthew Booth, I was like, okay, I want to be that one day. And look at me now. I'm sitting down
with you. Can I move on from that? Okay. Because I'm really blushing you, and you're messing up my makeup. I want to talk about something which is not easy to talk about. Mm-hmm. Corrective rape, which is a hate crime. People mm-hmm. do not want to call it a hate crime. People want to bracket it as a rape, but it is a hate crime, full stop. A major issue in South Africa, Khayelitsha, Langa, most of the townships, actually.
Yes.
And many other countries, many other townships, many other countries. Are you hopeful that you will live to be in a safe space where you truly feel you belong in your lifetime?
Mm. Oh, that's giving me a lot to think about, to be honest. It's something that I'm always, you know, on edge about. And it's mostly something that breaks my heart. Because even when I was coming here today, just how, like, I see people, you know, around me, you know, looking at me and having these disgusted faces breaks my heart, because I don't feel like I'm safe. I don't feel like people are open, you know, to understanding other people that are different from them. And for as long as that happens, I don't feel like I will be safe. I had a tragic incident that happened to me last year in December, where I was stabbed by, you know, one man who's a security guard, and I ended up actually going to prison for 4 days, you know what I mean? But that guy actually attacked me. So it was a very, you know, the system is messed up, because I was just seen as a, you know, as a masculine woman who looks wild, so therefore, you know, I'm violent enough to hurt a man. And they didn't, like, I don't feel like they saw that I'm still a woman, you know what I mean? And there was no compassion. I was just, like, thrown in the van like I'm an animal. My hands were bleeding. Thank God that I still have all my fingers. And I just was like, I'm just, wow. Being a victim and then you have to go through all of that is the worst.
You're a victim and you're put in the police van.
Exactly. But apparently in South Africa, because I didn't even have a chance to actually go and open a case. When another person opens a case against you, then you are, you know, the person who should go to jail. That's how it works in South Africa. They locked me in a room and then they still were kicking me around, and you know what I mean? But nothing was done to, you know, remedy the situation, or there was just no compassion. So I don't know. I'm very upset most of the time when I think about how even the police, when you go and report such instances, there's just no compassion. There's just that underlying, you know, patronizing homophobia that just won't go away. And I'm just, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I maybe my days are numbered.
So don't say that.
I don't know. You know, so maybe that's why I'm so full of life these days. Maybe, like, a day is coming where... But I don't know. I don't feel safe in South Africa. Yeah.
Wow. Yep. Okay. So now, this is what I'm about to read is based on your post.
Okay.
It has been reported that around 30% of LGBTI employees say they have seen instances of homophobic discrimination in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And 73% avoid discussing their private life at work. You tweeted, the corporate space can be so homophobic, but even with such ignorance, SA LGBTI voices must be heard.
Yes.
In your opinion, how can companies tackle LGBTI discrimination in the workplace?
It's exactly how I feel with people in general. We may be in corporate spaces, but that doesn't negate the fact that we're still human beings. So it's just more empathy, you know, in the workspace, and just don't treat, like, LGBT people as, like, you know, your puppets. Like, we're not here to just put on a show for you at the workspace just because you want to be cheered up or whatever. Like, just treat us as human beings. Just leave us. Like, leave us alone if we don't want to talk. Like, be there if we actually, you know, want to talk, you know. Create a community where it feels, you know, chilled and not hostile for people of different personalities, backgrounds, cultures. You know, the whole sexuality thing shouldn't be a big deal, but people make it a big deal. Just treat people with respect. And I think a lot of things would be different, you know.
Simple as that.
As simple as that.
The song Undizi, which mm-hmm. means I'm not coming,
yeah,
speaks about how the world has changed due to the nature of the new capitalist society. You said it.
Mm-hmm.
What is your opinion on the capitalist society?
I feel like it's changed a lot of people. I feel like it strips away, you know, from the essence of, you know, people. And altruism is not a thing these days because capitalism just keeps on sucking, you know, the lifeblood of humanity and just, you know, healthy ideals like peace and love. There's none of that. There's not a lot of that anymore, but it's a lot of ruthlessness where people feel like, okay, I must step on other people's toes now because I need to make money. That's the mentality. So capitalism for me, I'm not about it. I'm sorry. Like, I live in a capitalist society, yes, but it doesn't mean that I have to subscribe, you know, to those ideals. They're not mine.
We cannot talk about Andizi without you belting out a smaller nyana chorus.
Okay. Okay. So this is one from the song. It's a Van Gogh's. It's an ode to Van Gogh, who was a famous painter. Who didn't get his his due. So it's oil on canvas, post-impressionism, sadness reigns again, ill-facing window from his asylum, room just before the sun rises. Will the sadness remain or will it haunt the depths of my soul and echo in the corners of my melancholic mind? Oh, that's it.
Sure.
So listen to the to the music.
Okay. You also penned a song which pays homage to Akumzi Jezile the late, as well as the late Mama Madikizela Mandela.
Yes.
Mind singing just the chorus for us?
What is it again? Okay, now because it's very new, so now I have to actually think about it. Oh my God, I can sing another called Cosmic Fire because I'm on the spot. Okay, Cosmic Fire. Gena, are you sure? Usafuna uzoshiwa. If I uba zanga, there's a lot to be happy about. Amajoni, they are always ready for war. Are you ready? You must be ready.
That's goosebumps everywhere. Obi, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm in awe. I mean, I could talk to you all day. As I said, you are full of wisdom, and I love how you give it a thought when you are very enlightening.
Ah, thank you. Thank you so much, man. Thank you for the space. Thank you for inviting me to your happy home. Felt really good.
In my studio.
In your studio. Yes. Yes.
I learned compassion from being discriminated against. Everything bad that's ever happened to me has taught me compassion. Ellen DeGeneres. Hell hath no fury like a drag queen scorned. Sylvia Rivera, a transgender rights activist. Never be bullied into silence. Never allow yourself to be made a victim. Accept no one's definition of your life. Define yourself. Harvey Feinstein, a gay playwright, actor, and Tony winner. You don't have to live a lie. Living a lie will mess you up. It will send you into depression. It will warp your values. Gilbert Baker, creator of the Rainbow Pride flag. I've never been interested in being invincible and erased. Laverne Cox, a transgender rights activist and actress. Rita Mae Brown, a lesbian and feminine activist, said, I became a lesbian because of women, because women are beautiful, strong, and compassionate. Aspire to inspire before you expire.
That's it.
This is CliffCentral.com.